My name is Tanish, and I work at SUSE as a container engineer. In this session, we'll be talking about node control and containerd as an alternative to Docker and Podman. The agenda is going to look like the following. We'll first talk about Container Engine and the container runtime evolution. We'll talk about different container engines, runtimes, and their history, a little bit about their motivation, and then we'll move on to introducing containerd and node control. Then we'll also throw into the mix Runcie and Docker here because they are essentially most relevant to the topics being discussed here. Then we'll do a short comparison between the different tools, which is node control, containerd, Podman, Docker, and even Runcie. We then discuss a couple of advanced yet experimental features that are part of node control currently, and we'll also see a small demo with some of the features there. We'll close the session with a small slide on how you can get started with containerd on node control, and then we'll do a wrap up. So container runtime and the container engine evolution. Before I go ahead with the slide, just a small disclaimer that this slide deliberately excludes some of the technology that came before Docker, or even in between the timeline shown in the slide here. And that's deliberate. But the fact is that is done in order to maintain the brevity and the relevance for the slide. So you will not see Solaris containers or FreeBSD jails or LXC here. Now, with that out of the way, we'll start off with Docker. I think the idea with Docker when it started in 2013 was to simplify the distribution of applications using containers. And at this point, I think we can safely say that Docker essentially promulgated the widespread adoption of containers. And then container use essentially exploded after the launch of Docker. And then shortly after that, a couple of years later, Docker introduced something called Runcie. They tried to open source their low-level plumbing interface in the form of Runcie. We'll talk more about what Runcie is, what does it do in the later slides. But the idea behind open sourcing Runcie was essentially to perhaps give back to the community and also to make Docker's own source code a bit more modularized. In a sense that now Docker and Runcie and maybe perhaps other tools can see their development run in parallel, and then this would again benefit both Docker and the community. In the same vein, Docker again open sourced another utility, which is called Containerd. And apart from the goals that Docker had with Runcie, the primary goal with Containerd was to facilitate experiments with advanced features that would eventually pave the way back into Docker. So the idea is to play around with advanced features in Containerd, and then once they've been battle tested on Containerd, bake them back into Docker. And in late 2017, Red Hat comes out with Podman. It's an alternative container engine, which the primary aim of which is to address some of Docker's limitation, that is, not running a rootful daemon or is allowing users to run rootless containers, etc. And then in late 2020, folks behind Containerd introduced node control with a similar aim in mind as when Containerd was introduced. And the idea is to again facilitate even more cutting-edge experiments or advanced features in node control, which would then be promulgated across the containerized domain. For example, it could see their way back into Docker or even Podman, as we see with some of the features currently. So with that, let's talk a little bit about Containerd. So Containerd is a high-level container runtime. Why do we call it high-level? We call it high-level because there is a low-level container runtime that sits below Containerd, and that is Runcie. So Containerd was initially introduced as a daemon to manage Runcie. And Runcie is the one that deals with the Linux kernel and then leverages several Linux features to run containers. Some of the features for Containerd are container image management, that is pulling images, unpacking them into snapshots, etc. Network management, container supervision in the form of communicating with the lower level component, which is runc in this case, to run, create, stop, delete, start containers. And then also it handles metadata for the various objects involved in the container space, which is your snapshots, images, then volumes. On the right-hand side, you can see the chain of command between containerd and runc. So containerd is the one communicating in sort of like a downward API to runc, which further talks to the Linux kernel. Let's see history when it comes to containerd. Let's talk about some of the historical aspects of the introduction of to the introduction of containerd. It was, as we said earlier, it was initially developed by Docker and then open sourced. And the idea was, I think as we saw before, it was designed as a daemon to manage runc and to pave the way for advanced functionality. And these functionality could include checkpoint, restore, seccomp, user namespaces, and then eventually open the door for such features back into Docker. Now, we talked about how containerd is a high-level container runtime, and then it talks to a low-level container runtime, which is runc. And the other reason it is called a container runtime and not a container engine is because it sits underneath container engines or larger embedded systems. And on the right-hand side, you can see containerd is very commonly used with Kubernetes and Docker and other tools. And there's a very high chance that you've used containerd, but perhaps not just directly as of yet. So with these goals, it was never meant to be used directly by developers or end users. And this went on for a long while until there was a proper CLI in the form of node control, which we'll talk about next. But the thing is, over the time, containerd grew from a simple daemon, which was managing runc, which used to be part of Docker, to a full-blown runtime. And then at this point in time, there is a lot of overlapping features between runc, between Docker and containerd, and then they are now following their own development paths. But in no way containerd competes with Docker in that sense. It just so happens that there is now a, there are now more choices to the community when they come out with requirements in order to use a container runtime. So they can use either Docker, they can use containerd depending on their requirements. Also, yes, I think one of the goals that I missed here was the fact that development of Docker saw a lot of learnings, and then the team behind containerd used those learnings to create a cleaner interface and API. And then this is why I think you'll see a lot of discussion about plugins when it comes to containerd. It's very easy here. It's very easy to build plugins for containerd. And then that is because the kind of interface they've developed so far. And that was directly coming from learnings from developing Docker over the years. So we've been talking about runc for a while. I think it's fair that we give some screen time to runc also. So runc is a lightweight, portable container runtime. And we already know it's a low-level container runtime, which handles API calls from containerd. Like containerd communicates with runc in order to manage a container lifecycle. These low-level container runtimes are also referred to sometimes as runtime shims. And so these are the low-level components that are dealing with the Linux kernel, as we saw before. This is why runc is actually what owns the container processes. And then runc is the one interacting with the Linux kernel and leveraging features that make up containers in Linux. So these features such as control groups, namespaces, capabilities, app armor, and more. And other examples, I think runc is just one of the examples for a lower level container runtime. Other examples include crun from Red Hat, Firecracker from AWS, and gvisor from Google. So this is in a nutshell of how and what runc does and how it behaves. The diagram again shows the chain of command or the communication direction from runc to the Linux kernel, and then it operates leveraging some of the features available in the kernel, as we saw. let's talk about Nerd Control. Now, so Nerd Control was started off as a Docker compatible CLI for Containerd. And as we saw before, Containerd was not meant to be used directly by developers. It was supposed to be embedded into a larger system, but as Containerd morphed into a full-blown runtime, it made all the more sense for the team to have a CLI with two primary goals in mind. So one of the goals was to make it easy for new users to adopt Nerd Control and Containerd. And the way to do that was to make Nerd Control Docker compatible. So the CLI that you use with Docker, there is almost a one-to-one mapping with Nerd Control, so that it is easier for you to migrate, if you so happen to Nerd Control and Containerd coming from Docker. But again, in no way it aims to compete with Docker. That's not the primary goal here. And again, similar to Containerd, I think as we've mentioned before, Nerd Control was developed to facilitate experimental features in Containerd. And then similar to Containerd and how Docker communicated in one of the first slides, that advanced features in Containerd would make it back to Docker. The idea here is very similar, that we'll experiment some of the advanced experimental features in Nerd Control, and then they will be ported over to Docker and even Podman to some extent. And some of these features include lazy image pulling, which is to say that not waiting for the entire image being pulled and then just running containers, debugging Docker files in an interactive shell, and peer-to-peer container image distribution, and also container image signing using cosign or not. And we'll talk about some of these features later on, and then we'll also see demos for some of these features. Let's talk about Docker very, very briefly. So as we talked before, Docker is responsible for widespread container adoption. And it is a container engine by heart, because it is dealing with, or it is communicating with, low and high level container runtimes. For example, Containerd and by extension, Runcie. So Docker is not really a container runtime anymore. Maybe it used to be at one point in time, but not anymore. And it provides a high level CLI. I think most of us have used Docker, and then we are accustomed to the kind of CLI it provides. And that CLI has made its way into many other tools nowadays. For example, Podman is now Docker compatible, or at least aiming to be Docker compatible. On the right-hand side, you can see a rather simplified architecture for Docker. So you have components such as Docker Client, which is your Docker CLI most of the times, and you have Docker Compose talking to a daemon, which is Dockerd. This daemon would in turn talk to Containerd, and then Containerd would communicate with Runcie, and then Runcie would communicate with the Linux kernel. And this is how the whole flow looks like when you issue a command such as docker run minus it alpine echo hello. So how does all of this work together? We have certain high-level components. We've seen Docker, we know about Kubernetes, we've talked briefly about Nerd Control, and we know Podman as container engine as well. So these are the tools. Some of these tools actually directly communicate with Containerd. Again, we've seen this before, but now we're putting this together. And then, as we know, Containerd is embedded into Docker, into KTS, and Nerd Control, on the other hand, communicates with Containerd. And Containerd then talks to Runcie. And in this case, Podman also directly talks to Runcie. So despite being a container engine, Podman also serves as a container, or a high-level container runtime. And then it talks to Runcie to serve its container management lifecycle needs. And then finally, Runcie talks to the kernel. And this is how, if you have to compare at a glance how and where, let's say, Docker and Containerd stands, or Containerd and Podman stands, or, for example, Runcie and Nerd Control stands, which is not an appropriate comparison, but I think this diagram helps us understand how things are working together, how different components are at different layers in the whole chain of command. Short segue, because there seems to be a little bit of confusion with a bunch of tools. For example, CTL, CryCTL, NerdCTL. CTL is essentially, as we have talked before, container D was never meant to be used by users. But it still needed a certain utility for the developers working on container D to communicate with it, maybe debug it or test it or look at the logs or whatever, right? So that was what the original idea with CTL was. It was a debugging utility rather than an end user command line interface for container D. And then we have CryCTL, which is a CLI utility for Kubernetes, Kubelet CLI, which is a container runtime interface. I think it's in the news these days a lot, but it is, again, very different from CTL in the sense that it deals with the Kubelet CLI, which is to say that Kubernetes basically earlier had a Docker shim, and Docker was the sole container runtime that Kubernetes used to use. And then over time, as the advent of new container runtime started happening, Kubernetes created a new runtime interface. And then container runtimes can implement that API, which is provided with the runtime interface, and then they can plug into Kubernetes. So CryCTL is used for that purpose. And then NerdControl, as we all know, it's a Docker-compatible end-user CLI for container D. So just to clear out a little bit of confusion here, we'll move on, and then we'll see how a couple of the tools that we've already talked about compare with each other. So we'll talk about four primary features, and these are the four columns shown in the table here, and then the three container engines slash runtime on the left-hand side, which are the rows. So Podman, so let's talk about rootless. Podman is the only container engine which had rootless as one of the initial goals. And although Containerd and NerdControl started supporting rootless, it was very much later into the development cycle of these tools because it was never a design goal, so to say. Then container lifecycle is essentially, since it's been taken care of by the lower level components, this is more or less exactly the same in all three of these. And then we come to image management, in which case NerdControl provides image encryption along with the standard operations, and then Podman also does the same. Then we talk about network management. Here things are more or less similar because almost all of them use this library called Slurp for NetNS in order to provide rootless networking, but NerdCTL recently came out with a bypass for NetNS, which improves the performance of rootless networking provided by Slurp for NetNS by manifolds. And we'll see how improved this is in the later sections of the session. Now I think we can talk about some of the features of NerdControl and see some of the demos. So the primary, one of the very fancy features that I really like is lazy image pulling. So one of the studies done by some of the folks at University of Wisconsin, they analyzed and benchmarked about 60 containerized workloads, and they found that pulling packages account for roughly 80% of the container start time, but only 6.4% of the data is read at runtime. And this is essentially the Pareto principle, but it's working in reverse here. And the idea out of this is the fact that pulling takes the majority of time when running a container, afresh from the start, because you're not using a lot of files that are part of the container image. And in this case, what NerdControl provides is lazy image pulling, which is to say that we are not pulling the complete image, but we're only pulling selected data, which helps us start the container before even the image pull is completed. And this sounds fancy, but we'll quickly take a look at some of the benchmarks provided on the NerdControl GitHub repository. So as you can see, the traditional way of doing things, which is legacy, is usually takes a lot longer. And then the star GZ, which is a snapshot or a file system snapshot for node control is considerably faster when it comes to pulling images and running them. But if you notice closely, the time it takes for the container to run is slightly increased in StarGZ without optimization. So there are two versions of StarGZ, which is with optimization, without optimization. With optimization here basically means that while converting an image to a StarGZ version, some benchmarking is done, and then we see what kind of files the container needs at which point, and then we occasionally and accordingly cache those files beforehand. So we're not fetching certain files at runtime from the network. And then without is basically, again, we're not doing any caching. So in this case, the run might take a little bit of more time because we're fetching fresh files from the network. So let's quickly see a demo right now. So I have the StarGZ snapshot running on my machine. And then here I'm just simply doing a comparison between traditional pull and StarGZ snapshot of pull. And we are going to pull a Python 3 image and see how they fare out. So while this goes on, I think StarGZ is one of the snapshotters, one of the snapshot plugins. There are other file systems that are available, for example, Nidos Overlay PD that you can take a look into. And then I think we can see here that StarGZ, I think lazy pulling is already done, and then it took roughly 23 seconds. Whereas the legacy way of pulling images took roughly around 40 seconds. So I think it depends on a lot of factors, how you're optimizing the images, what kind of workloads you have, but it definitely is considerably faster than legacy image pulling. Let's come back, and we can now talk about another feature, another very nice feature, or experimental feature that Node Control provides, which is registry-less image distribution using IPFS. So this is a fancy way of saying peer-to-peer image distribution by leveraging IPFS, which is interplanetary file system. And IPFS is essentially a decentralized network protocol designed to store and distribute files on the internet. So that's one of the relevant goals of IPFS, but it's not the primary goals. One of the examples that we can think about here is node-to-node peer image sharing in a KDES cluster. For example, you can pull image on a particular cluster, and then you don't need to worry about pulling that same image on different clusters time and time again. You can simply share the image amongst the cluster, and the cluster can act as peers, right? So that's one. And then here we can sort of like visualize how these differ from the traditional way of pulling images. And then traditionally, the container registry acts as a single source of truth for all the container images. One node pushes the image to the registry, and the other node pulls from the registry. So the registry acts as a source of truth for a container image. Using IPFS or peer-to-peer image distribution, on the other hand, essentially avoids or eliminates using a centralized repository or a centralized container image registry. So here, I think, as you can see in the diagram on the right, there is a peer that requires an image, and then other peers can basically it can pull images from neighboring peers. And I'm assuming you would know how P2P works based on a very popular protocol which enables distributed file sharing system, file sharing on the internet. And then let's quickly see a demo for the same. So I already have a IPFS daemon running. I am gonna quickly push an Alpine image to this different tag, let's say. Oops, okay, let me find latest alpine test, and then we push this, and this is pushed. And we can use this CID, which is a hash for the container image, and we can say nerd control to run this by pulling from IPFS rather than the registry. And before that, let me quickly remove the images so that it makes sense. Okay. So we don't have any image, and then we run it, and there we are. So it doesn't, of course, it doesn't make a lot of sense on a single host, but I think you get the idea of how this works. Now there is another fancy feature which is provided by Node Control, which is debugging Docker files. Now this is provided via a tool called Bilgi, and Node Control basically leverages Bilgi and then provides Docker file debugging in an interactive fashion. And then you also have the ability to add breakpoints in the Docker file for debugging. But it's much more fun if you see the demo quickly. So here I have a simple Docker file, which is installing a Figlet package in a base Alpine image. And I can just do builder debug dot, and it goes into a debug mode. And what I can do here is I can add a breakpoint, and then I can say stop at line number 2, and I want to see, I want to debug whether things are actually working or not. And then I say continue. And then at the breakpoint, I can run commands. And now here, I can simply check if Figlet was actually installed or not. Well, it does work indeed. And continue. And now I can say run IT Figlet. It works twice. Okay. So that's doc file debugging in container in Node Control. This is a fancy feature. I think it's still experimental and advanced, but I think it makes for a, since it's not meant to be used in production, I don't think you can use it in production. It's more meant as a developer workflow. I think it's makes for a nice addition to a developer workflow. Then it also provides running containers from encrypted images. This is one of the features for Node Control, and then you can encrypt container images using the command Node Control Image Encrypt in order to protect the confidentiality if your particular use case so desires. And you can use the commands as shown in the slide here, but the idea is to essentially create a key pair and then use your public key to encrypt the image and then use your private key to decrypt the image. It uses ImageCrypt or OCIcrypt internally for encryption and decryption. And the last is rootless networking using bypass for NetNS. So Slurp for NetNS is the de facto tool to provide network solution for rootless containers right now. So every container component right now uses Slurp for NetNS, whether that be Docker, that be Podman, or even Node Control so far. And the thing about Slurp for NetNS is that it is slow than a traditional host network due to virtualized networking in user space. So what Node Control does is it uses something called bypass for NetNS, which avoids this overhead by tapping sockets as calls and executing them in host networking namespace. So it's slightly different than your --net equals to host, which is to say that just use the host network namespace in the container, but it is almost as fast as that. In fact, it is, in some benchmarks, it is shown to be faster than rootful networking. And then you can run rootless networking as shown in the commands here. I think we're running out of time in order for me to show you a demo, but it's fairly straightforward. And with that, I think we can move on to the last section of the session, which is to say how you can get started with Containerd and Node Control. It's again very straightforward. If you're running a SUSE system or any Linux distribution, popular Linux distribution for that matter, you can install the Containerd and Node Control packages, and then you can run the following command, and you should have Node Control and Containerd running out of the box. For rootless, there is one other step that is required. This there is a script that is provided by the Containerd folks that you can use to set up rootless containers using Node Control, which is, again, the links are there in the slides. You can take a look at those later on. And with that, I think we can talk about the takeaways. So the idea for this session was for more and more people to try out newer tools. And in this case, it turned out to be Containerd and Node Control. They have a host of new features, and it is quite a lot of fun to try those features out. For example, lazy pulling is so much fun to use and to understand how it works. And in a similar vein, rootless networking is also fun. Interactive Docker file debugging is a nice to have feature when you're writing a lot of Docker files or dealing with a lot of Docker files. And also a lot of diversity in the domain eventually helps further more innovation in future in the space. So it eventually means more choice for the user and more development and more innovation. And we're already seeing the effects of these, because certain features that were started off with Podman, with Node Control, are now being ported back to Docker and Podman, as we saw. For example, lazy pulling is one of the features that is making its way into Docker and Podman. And this space is, of course, continuously evolving, basically with innovation, both new and older tools. And there's so much to watch out for. So I hope you try out some of the features that we talked about in this session. And then if you have any questions, I'll be sitting down in the chat room in order to answer your questions. Thanks a lot for joining the session, and hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.